Our God is with you.
And also with you.
This is a story taken from the Gospel of Mark. A leper came to Jesus, and kneeling down, he begged him, "If you wish, you can make me clean." Moved with pity, he stretched out his hand and touched him and said, "I do will it. Be made clean." The leprosy left him immediately, and he was made clean. And then, warning him sternly, he dismissed him at once. He said, "See that you tell no one, but go and show yourself to the priest and offer for your cleansing what Moses prescribed. That will be a proof to them." The man went away and began to publicize the whole matter. He spread his report abroad so that it was impossible now for Jesus to go openly into any town. He remained outside in deserted places, and people kept coming to him from everywhere. People of God, hear what the Spirit is saying. Can you hear the challenge? One day, I believe that's what the challenge today is. One day, people. One day we shall overcome. One day we're going to be able to sit at one table and not be talking about who's unclean and who needs to be made clean. That's the challenge, I believe, today's reading. You see, leprosy is cited in a number of different places in the Bible. And in the book of Kings, he talks with Naaman, the leader of the army of King Aram. He had leprosy, and he went down into the water, you know, seven times, and all that was going on with him. That happened around 585, so that's some 2,500 years ago. And I named that the years for a reason. And then in the book of Chronicles, King Uzziah, he had leprosy. And that would have been around the year 400. That would have been 2,400 years ago. It's interesting that Miriam was struck with white leprosy and received a punishment for complaining to Moses that he had a Cushite wife. Interesting. It's interesting that Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they all have stories about lepers and those who were excluded from the community. That would have been about 2,000 years ago. All these people were welcomed back into the community. But it's because leprosy was so visible, it involved a decay and corruption of the body. It served as an excellent way for calling people sinful. It was an idea that sin corrupts the spiritually the way leprosy corrupts the body. And so it gave a way that people could do that. And they really didn't know what it was. So I'm not putting blame on them. What would they have known 2,500 years ago about what leprosy was? They wouldn't have Suzanne there to help. They wouldn't have all the scientists that knew about bacteria and all that caused that. My question is, what's the lesson for us? Have we at times on a spiritual level excluded people because we didn't understand them? Excluded people because we didn't know what they were about? On a personal level, have we done that? Now, when we look back on in Leviticus, this is very specific. You heard Suzanne did a wonderful job with that. That if there's any this or that pustules that is looking at that, and are they clean or unclean, that 7 days later, which is significant, 7 days, that they would bring themselves to the priest so that the priest could say, yeah, it's cleared up, you're unclean, and you need to go outside of the community. Now, I want to tell you that as I read further on that scripture, I found it something that was really calming for me. Here's what it says. A man who has lost his hair and is bald is clean. And if he's lost hair in the front of his scalp and is bald in forehead, he's clean too. Don, we're okay, man. Richard, we're okay. I don't know about you other folks. Michael, you're in the group too. Lou? Ellis. Today we know that leprosy is Hansen's disease. And Hansen's disease can infect, it's a slow-growing bacteria. And it can infect the nerves, the skin, the eyes. It can look at all that. It affects the nasal passages. There is today a diagnosis and a treatment of it. And all that came about because we're able to understand what bacteria is and what antibiotics can do and how it can save others. But if I look at the challenge, are the things that disease our country, our world? What about sexism? Because we're afraid of it, fear of it. What about racism? What about the way we push people out in our society and what we do? Now, the RSV translates, which was the reading we read today, translates that Jesus was moved with pity. Some older manuscripts says that he was moved with anger. It's a different way to look at it. Bonnie Thornton, when she read it, she says, it's a more difficult reading if we read it that he was moved with anger. And yet that may be the more technical one. That Jesus was moved with anger is appropriate for this devastating disease that touched people, especially the social ostracization and pushing people out. Maybe he was angry at the purity laws that excluded them. Maybe he was thinking of himself. And maybe what we need to do is, and what he may have done, is mingle the pity or compassion and the part of anger. I can be angry at human laws that put somebody in a position of being pitiful or worthless. I can pity someone with anger, as Jesus did, because of the purity laws. Some of the laws we have that make people feel that they're less worth it. And that's kind of what that leper came to Jesus. If you want me, you could heal me. He didn't see that he was worthy because of what was going on. And if we understand those things, sure, that was there. But what was the thing that pushed those people's beliefs? It was fear, because they didn't know. So it's not to blame them, but it's to understand what fear does to us when we're motivated by fear. Fear makes us not be able to see what's really there. Fear takes away the ability to have compassion with others. It makes me think of things that have happened in my own lifetime. When I was at Resurrection Church over on Graymont Avenue, living over there on the west side, I would tell people that I was over there, and they'd say, "Oh, aren't you scared of being over there? You afraid of walking at night with your dog or in the morning with your dog?" And I said, "No, not at all." I says, "I know the people. They know me. There's nothing to be feared. There's just as much whatever going on would fear them." But they couldn't see that. And I had pity or compassion for them because they couldn't see a different way. And it affected the way they saw him. I had anger that our society pushes at. You know, Dayton is one of the most segregated cities in the United States. We don't always know that. And during Black History Month, pardon me, I think it's important that we take a look at that. But I truly also believe that one day we shall overcome that. And it takes you and me to be part of that. I remember years ago, this is when I was at St. Luke, I was visiting somebody in the hospital. This is the early 1980s. And I happened to be visiting a person in the hospital who had HIV. Well, I mentioned it to somebody that I visited a person, didn't say his name, but mentioned a person that he had HIV, and he says, "Oh my God, did you wash up? Did you take care? Did you clean up?" I said, "No." I was fortunate enough to have a high school friend who lived during that time. He was a doctor, Harry Habercos, and he worked it in D.C. on studying HIV. And he said, "There's so much fear out there about something that doesn't need to be. And yet even sometimes today, people don't want to If you're in a relationship, they don't want to have blood transfusions. Can't donate blood. And it's fear-based, not love-based. And I believe, as we take a look, one day we shall overcome that too. We've come long ways with it in understanding it. Take a look at the immigrant situation we have here in the United States and the fear that goes on with that. I looked this up online. Opponents of immigration often argue that immigrants drive up crime rates. But a newly released research in Stanford economist Rand Abramowitz and said that hasn't been the case in America for 140 years. Think about that. The study goes on and says first-generation immigrants are not have not been more likely to be in prison than people born in the United States. Today, immigrants are 30% less likely to be incarcerated in the U.S. than U.S. individuals, white individuals who were born in the United States. Now, if you bring in black folks, it jumps up to 60. Because black folks who are a minority are arrested more than white folks. The laws are different about the way if you have cocaine or if you have opiates because of the people who use them. So what drives that? I believe it's driven by fear that's there. It's driven by fear, and it gives us, I think, a place where Jesus was, where he had pity, he had compassion for folks, but he also had anger. And that anger, I believe, is what Marshall Rosenberg says. Anger, and the purpose of anger, is to let us know that a need is not being met. Now, when I teach this at the prison, I give this example. Y'all know what a red engine light is when it goes off in your car. What do you got to do? Got to take it in, have somebody look at it. See what's wrong with the car. And when I ignore that, what happens to my car? I blow up the engine. I blow some up, it's worse, and it gets worse. When we begin to see this anger that I need, and what's the need? The need, I believe, is more love. The need, I believe, is more compassion. Compassion for those who have those feelings about immigration, who have racist ideas, for the people that it punishes, but also to bring up to awareness what this is about. It's really about what our journey to understanding has been, what we learned about the trans people, what we're going to learn this coming Saturday, what's happening with racism and how it affects the state. We're going to learn about it when we talk about how do we talk with our family with compassion and with the need of understanding when we have those difficult conversations with family members that we all got. How do we do that? There's a book that Patty looks at all the time, and I was looking at this book, and it says it gives a reason and a way to do it. And that's why I also believe that day will come. It will come when we will overcome. And this is what the book says. It's important that we remind you from time that the universe operates on an immense reflecting pool. All you ever see is yourself, yourself, yourself. The universe mirrors back to you whatever you're up to. If you are stingy and withholding of yourself, it will look as if everyone else is stingy around you and toward you, withholding from you. It is that mirror that reflects. No one can give it to you unless you unwillingly give it to yourself. Millions of wonderful, lovely people live in deprivation because they have not realized that they truly deserve, that they are hoping for someone or something outside them to notice them and give them the feedback that it will never happen. Until we make that inner shift that occurs from being from within a being, when we realize that the claims are in us, that we can make a difference, that it's us who live that out. We deserve what we deserve. We are what we are settling for. Impoverished, disheartened miracle workers are not likely to be useful in the great plan. So there's nothing for us to be disheartened about. It's for us to stand up and know that one day we'll be here, that one day we will overcome. You ever hear the saying, be the change you wish to see in the world? Now, everybody attributes that to Mahatma Gandhi. And Mahatma Gandhi didn't say that. Expanded version of what that was, and unfortunately, it's simplified. Gandhi said, "We but mirror the world. All the tendencies present in the outer world are found in the world within our own bodies. If we change ourselves, the tendencies in the world would also change. A person changes their own nature, so does the attitude of the world change towards them. This is a divine and supreme mystery, a wonderful thing, and it's really the source of our happiness. We do not need to wait to see what others do." Gandhi goes on to say, "Be the change encourages us not to complain about what others are doing." Boy, isn't that some good word today? I'm going to read it again. Gandhi says, "Be the change encourages us not to complain about what others are doing." I need to stop complaining about other people, complaining on what this other side does and that. There is just so much complaining in our world, we're missing the opportunity to change. Be the change, that's great advice. Pay attention to your inner self, not what you may be fearing that those who judge might have leprosy, those who might fear. And it's up to us to need to extend that love, to extend that compassion to others, because we don't know what's driving their fear. And love is the only thing that's going to take that fear away. I believe that that's what Gandhi's message was. I believe that's what Jesus' message was. In a challenge of healing that leprosy man, in order to make effective change, we might not judge what's wrong. We must first alter our personal nature. We got to do that inner work ourselves. This world is a new place, and we can make that difference. Complaining about others doesn't change anything. It keeps the world where it is. Looking inside and bringing that compassion first for ourselves and then to others is how we do it. When in 1919, there was a song that was written, and it was written by James Weldon Johnson, and it became the national black anthem. And I think it speaks to that. And I'd like you to, as we sit and listen to that song, I'd like you to think about the difference that we can make. And it speaks of that. And then we'll open up for people's comments.